IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. In today's podcast, we will be talking about why music education matters, especially more in the Indian context. And I have a special guest with me. Her name is Lakshmi Iyer, and I'll introduce her in a bit. I'm Malathi Renati. I head the policy school here at Takshashila. And Lakshmi has, I've been acquainted to Lakshmi for, I think, a little over 3 years now. She's a lovely person to interact with and, you know, a very talented musician as well. So Lakshmi Iyer is Malaysian-born Indian, and she settled in Mumbai. She's been settled in Mumbai since 2001. A microbiologist by profession, and right from the tender age of 5, Lakshmi has been exposed to and trained in Carnatic classical music, with a focus on vocals and the Saraswati Veena under the tutelage of several gurus in Malaysia. She also learned to play the mridangam. And in addition to this, she has a very special talent, the musical whistling ability, which she began pursuing in a more serious manner since 2017. And due to her this passion towards music whistling, she joined the managing committee of the Indian Whistlers Association, IWA, as its treasurer and spokesperson in 2018. And she has several stage performances over the years to her credit. And my personal opinion, since I've known Lakshmi through the Indian Whistlers Association that I'm also a member of, is that she's one of the best whistlers in India. Okay, I can easily vouch for that. And she has actually invested her time to guide many of the Indian Whistler Whistling Association members online to not just hone their skills and get better, but also, you know, she enjoys curating music, video and audio projects as well. And you know, to help showcase and promote musical whistling to the masses as a performing art. So welcome once again, Lakshmi. It's a pleasure having you.
Thank you, Malathi. Thank you very much for the very nice and generous introduction. And it has been a pleasure being acquainted with you also for the past 3 years through the Indian Whistlers Association. Yeah, I think you have a very nice, interesting topic at the table today, and which I hope I will be able to contribute significantly. Yeah. So.
Yeah, thanks, Lakshmi. Thank you very much. You will be, because I think that's the reason I wanted to have you on the podcast, because I think one needs to speak from one's experience, right, when it comes to showcasing the importance of music in education, especially, you know, at the early childhood stage.
Yes.
So, Lakshmi, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself in terms of how you started your music journey? And because I know that there are many communities or, you know, musical families, like where music has, runs through many generations and they've been exposed to music at a young age. Or there's some communities where children are put into either vocal or the instrumental from, you know, like around the same age that you started, around 5. Right, and we know that this is this helps also in the on the academic side, and we'll get to that at the latter half of the podcast. But I just wanted to wanted the listeners to hear your story of how, you know, your journey began.
Yes, sure. I'll just give some insight on that. So as far as I'm concerned, I was born in Malaysia, and my parents were a little. We are from a traditional Kerala Brahmin family, and so my parents were very much into culture, religion, and they wanted to mold us and groom us along those lines. So my father was he was not a musician or in any way exponent himself, but he had a very, very high affinity for music. He loved to listen, and he used to, you know, participate in community activities. They were very, very strong with community service. So much of our community service revolves around, you know, bhajans, religious activities, festivals. So they were very much a part of that. And so we as growing children, I have a brother who is 4 years senior to me. So both of us were constantly exposed to such environment and circumstances. So it kind of, came very naturally that he was very, very interested in making us learn music, introducing, elements of discipline and some affinity for culture, basically. He was very particular about that. And so at that time, I guess this is like in the 70s when I was in primary. And so we didn't have any other kind of external technology or technical inputs like how we have now. So it was all personal interaction, one-to-one interaction, physical involvement, 100% of the time. So in that way, we had good music teachers because that was a big boon, actually, although we were in a foreign country, out of India, but we had lot of Indians from India settled in Malaysia because everybody was trying to make a livelihood that time. They came from little, poorer backgrounds in India. So they thought, a lot of many people migrated to Malaysia at that time before its independence and set up, their expertise or got into their expert fields. So in that way, we were very fortunate to have a lot of well-trained teachers in Carnatic music. So my father was very, very keen. And so because we had these contacts and accessibility, so he put us at a very tender age. He tried, various things. Like initially, we started learning percussion first. My brother started learning percussion and since he's 4 years older to me. And I would just go accompany him and, listen to what's going on. And then maybe a year or two later, I also became part of that classroom because, I was kind of...
That's when you picked up the...
Yeah. Right, so percussion was actually the first thing that I was introduced to, surprisingly. Nice. Okay. And also side by side, I had several teachers over the years. So right from age five, we used to, depending on distance and how convenient it was to go somewhere. So we were kind of shifting teachers. And I think by the around 1980, I think, somewhere around when I was in third or fourth standard, we settled on one teacher and the focus was on vocals for me and my brother, and for him percussion ran along, whereas I just shifted to vocals fully. And after a year or so, I was also introduced to the veena. So it was my father's desire which actually, charted the path, actually. So, and as being as young as that, I don't think we had any kind of, to oppose or we enjoyed the experience. There was no stress factor it was a very natural and enjoyable experience and it fell into our lifestyle, kind of thing. So, and my house used to always be full of prayers and, we had 3 times a week, my father used to do puja, prayers, we had bhajans. So everything kind of felt very natural. And so the pace went on very steadily. And I think easily till I was about 15, this over a 10-year period, I think we had a very regular and systematic approach to music. And so it was just an inherent thing which flowed very well. So one aspect is thankfully we were able to have that ability to absorb it. That is one thing. You need to be cut out. You need to have a sense of tune and all this to be able to follow it, religiously, level after level. But it was all informal. Like there were no exams to appear, no such things at that time. It was an informal guru to shishya kind of imparting, and we took it very seriously, very respectfully, and we saw that whatever we did it very respectfully. So it was an enjoyable experience, a totally different kind of experience, I would say. And so it developed a lot of skills, I feel, like discipline, one thing, and having like scheduled activities through the day. So my father was very nice in that way. He exposed us not only to cultural and religious things. He made sure that we had a balance of physical activity outside, sports, you know, a lot of exposure. So in all things. So we were part of many dances, plays, dramas, you know, throughout. So everything had music as an element, touching, you know, everywhere. So it was a very wholesome exposure as far as I'm concerned. So, and we don't see those, the effects or the results of those, we kind of sometimes see much later. And I think I found the good attributes and the good things that came out of it when in higher level of studies and all, some, you know, like 15 and above, I could see that it was helping me assimilate a lot of other information, right, through from academics. And, you know, it was helping in a lot of things. Like, you know, we used to use music for a lot of things. Like we used to create little stories or poems to reinforce certain, you know, academic elements, that kind of thing. So because you have some music knowledge, so you know certain familiar tunes or, you know, kind of things like that. So you are able to put things into you know, a little clearer perspective, which helps your memory, you know, all those kind of cognitive skills and all. So I think it was really, I mean, a nice, it was a very nice development and a process. And so I can see it now, reflecting back, I can see it very clearly now how it has helped me in a lot of ways to, you know, to be more receptive to a lot of things, like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, amazing, Lakshmi, and thanks for sharing your experience and, you know, your journey. And, you know, many things that you mentioned there about how it kind of it helped you, you know, in your academics and other things. It's so relevant because we know that music itself is a de-stressor, right? It's,
yes.
Those of us those who just listen to music and might not play an instrument or might not sing, but and yet they enjoy just
being
in that space of, you know, just relaxing with music, especially after, you know, a stressful day. So we will be coming to that part of it after the break. And I'm glad that you mentioned all these points because they're very relevant, especially when you're exposed to it at a young age through your childhood. And it also builds in that discipline, right?
I think is a very important factor to be exposed, mm-hmm. you know. Everybody can't possibly maybe learn in a serious manner, but exposure can be for everybody. So how easily you can, you know, how easily you can access or be exposed is the primary element, I think so. And that slowly builds interest. So the more you are exposed, the more you have your listening skill will develop, and then you kind of know what interests you, what is attractive to you. So that exposure is very, very important, I feel. That listening bit,
right. So
that's
true.
The primary thing. Yeah. Learning can come later. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the exposure is what stimulates the mind. Yeah.
Yeah. No, agreed, Lakshmi. I think you hit the nail on the head. And especially in this time and age where there's lots of distractions and attention spans are very short.
Yes.
Because of, you know, we're in a digital age where, you know, there's a lot of stimuli around us. Having that exposure and ensuring it's a constant, and it's there. It's a routine that you follow, essentially, right? And you look forward to it.
Another thing is,
and you also,
if I may say, another thing is, in the initial stages, it should be a fun experience as well, and not too rigorous, and you know, not very hardcore. Initially, it should be a fun experience. That exposure should be fun. And then slowly, you know, some kind of regimen and, you know, a process should be implemented. But initially it should be. Otherwise, if it will become too overwhelming, if at the very start, if you have too many rules, too many rules and too many rigid guidelines, then it can become overwhelming to some. Yeah, because like I said, not everybody is in that same space. So some have a higher aptitude for, you know, intake. Some are just have a casual approach to it. So That is the thing. So the exposure should be light at first, and then slowly it can, go towards a more serious format.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yes, yes. We had all schools when I was studying, we are all in government schools, but so we had a dedicated music period every week. So it's not like every day, but like maybe twice in a week, we would have a 45-minute music session. But of course, it will be just, a teacher playing on the piano. And then so you are exposed to common songs, common rhymes, common English songs. And because I was from a cosmopolitan society, so they would introduce Chinese songs to us, all small songs which could, just get you to know each other's culture, that kind of thing. So that was a very good thing. And also that they inculcated that team sense, always, because you have a big group, a class is always having about 40 students in our time. So they used to make a choir out of us most of the time. So, when you're part of a choir, you learn to coordinate. So that was a very, very, now that you think about it, yeah, you see, coordination skill was developed even at that time, so teamwork and coordination, you have to correspond to each other kind of thing, that was there right from the start. So these were small building blocks which had started informally at that time, which I feel can be implemented at a much better way in this time and era. Yeah, because there are more resources for it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally relate to this, what you're mentioning too, Lakshmi, because I grew up also in Zambia where, again, it's outside of India, right? We're looking at a kind of different culture. So it was, again, cosmopolitan. We had people from all over the world,
right,
from Europe and the US, Canada, South America, Australia. And the local music in the local language was also something that was part and parcel, because especially in Zambia and pretty much in, I've noticed those in South Africa, also the southern part of Africa, they have a ear for music and also for dance. So it just comes naturally to them.
Yes.
And things like drums and other things, right? It's so much part of their culture that each kid, the moment the music is being played, you'll see even a small toddler, right, just getting up and dancing. And it's so naturally done that, it's a part and parcel of their lives.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's because they've grown up with it, right? They've grown having that as part in their,
celebration. Exactly, in the environment, that they have been brought up. Yes. Very true.
And that's when, like you mentioned, right, you kind of then get you have that ear for music as you're exposed to it over a period of time.
Yes, yes.
A couple of things which kind of stood out in what you mentioned is that you said that music in those days, there was no formal exams as such. Whereas nowadays, you notice that many times kids are exposed to, they're under the pressure that, oh God, they have a music exam. They need to pass it before they, can get to the next level. And that kind of adds to the already competitive spirit around us, right? So music should be something that one takes up because they enjoy it, because it brings them a lot of joy and, they can relax when they're,
at the same,
either they're playing an instrument or
At the same time, of course, those who really want to focus into music nowadays, music is a career too.
Right.
Those who really want to get into career, then that path is also there for them, where you give serious, you complete exams. Because if you want to be a teacher, like how you want to teach in a school, you need the B.Ed. So the same way, if you need to be impart music to some other somebody else, then you need to have that certain qualification. Then you'd have to go all the way. Yeah. And so, so that path is also there for those who want to pursue it in a much more serious manner. And otherwise, that there is also this, leeway where you can just engage without having additional, stress. Yeah, that is there.
Right, right. No, absolutely. And I think it's a good point in time in our podcast, sort of segue into that aspect where, we're saying where music is part of the educational system and how one could potentially have that as a career, right? Who can make a career out of it. So I was just looking at our national education policy, the one in 2022, NEP 2020, NEP 2020. And over here, They do focus on, they've brought in the music, which again comes under the arts and culture, promotion of Indian languages, arts and culture as a, you know, umbrella kind of area. And then I was going through it, and there were a couple of things which, you know, I just, that kind of struck me from a music perspective. They've mentioned how before the NEP in our conventional schools, music education was often treated as an add-on subject. Yeah. So there was no formal curriculum and assessment framework. So it was like you know, maybe a couple of periods in a week. And if you're interested, you can go for it. If not, you know, you could possibly, there's another parallel session going on, like an extracurricular activity that you could take up. So music was just one of those, right? But in the National Education Policy 2020, they recognized that the cognitive and the creative abilities of the arts, which where music, that music is also part of, they saw that that's an integral part and it complements the academics.
Right.
So they've now in the NEP, it's kind of divided into four parts. The document itself, and it focuses on the primary education. The second part focuses on the higher education, and the third part, interestingly, is also talks about adult education and lifelong learning.
Right.
The promotion of Indian arts, languages and culture. And the fourth one talks also about making it happen, like right. From the financing perspective.
Okay.
Can we make it affordable? Can we have people, you know, the having an exposure to it?
Right.
And making a career out of it eventually, right? So they've now, it's a more holistic approach that they've taken. And a few key things that I'll just highlight here is that they found that the integration of music education in all stages and domains of education, from pre-primary to higher education, is very important, and that they've stated that. They've also spoken about early childhood education, and that music and movement, which is dance and all the other forms. So music and movement should be part and parcel of early childhood education, and that the India's the Indian languages being one of the most, like, you know, the most, they're so rich, right? Our Indian languages, and the most scientific and the most beautiful, as they've termed it.
Yes, absolutely.
What they've said, is that these languages, that in turn, have their own music, as in their own script and their own prose and poetry, right? So, you know, that also should be incorporated, so a child gets that exposure, you know, from a young age. And a couple of other things, two more points that kind of stood out was that if, you know, to have adequate teachers who can teach these subjects, so including art and music. And this is important because when we say career in music, it's not just that, not just for the musician, but also all the other, the ecosystem around it, right? It could be those teaching, it could be the, you know, from a, if you could bring in the bazaar or the marketplace into the picture, about the instruments that could be sold and as a result, and the you know, if the government's put you know, suitable policies in place which encourages you know, people to come, maybe have their own music academies, space for it, you know, in a community, and to encourage that. So, you know, we have small ecosystems of this maybe all over the town, and people have easy access to
yes,
it,
yes.
And they're not kind of caught in all that commute and all this other hassles.
True.
And so that's something that they've also brought out, like having, you know, school complexes or clusters. So let's say in a rural area where one school has the facilities, instead of each and every school having their own facility, which
they is might difficult.
Limited.
Yes.
Yeah, because of finances and other things, that they have like a cluster concept where schools can come together for that. For just music, or for that, it could be even for sports. So this is something that this is relevant even for sports, and it ensures that the facility is being used, and also it improves on other aspects like the social. You know, the schools can the kids can meet up. They get to
interact. Yes,
improve on their social skills also.
Right.
So the NEP has kind of put out these recommendations. Of course, it depends. It's not a mandatory thing. Schools can adapt. You know what they want, but adapt to the recommendations as in how they deem fit. But it's nice that this has been highlighted. You know that it's been recognized as
yes, as yeah. It's good that it has been you know, brought to the limelight, that it is recognized as important, and you know, steps are being taken to, you know, work towards it. Yeah. So I just like to chime in here for maybe related to what you were saying about this collective facility. And also, of course, I don't know too much about how in different states or, you know, but what I read was like in Bangalore, I think there has been a very good initiative with the, they have this set up this Indian Music Experience Museum in JP Nagar, Bangalore. It's a non-profit initiative which is supported by the Brigade Group. They are a big music group also, I believe. And so they are you know, trying to, because Indian music is so diverse and rich, and so they want to preserve this heritage. Indian music, as you know, is divided to Hindustani as well as Carnatic. These are the two main bifurcations of Indian music. And so they have actually set up a very nice initiative, I believe, and where community outreach has been a very integral and focus in their vision. And also, what is their primary goal is to have inclusion and also a way to build and engage with the society so that music impacts their lives, you know. So I think this is a very closely related initiative with the NEP kind of policy that you're saying, yeah, and which is already in practice, you know, put into practice, and it's going on. So what I actually gathered from their website is they have set up music classes and for across all instruments, Carnatic, Hindustani, vocal and instruments. So they have got, you know, they have started having classes also online and also at their premise. And at the same time, they are also promoting this through two main community outreach programs called Project Swarita and Yuva in Culture. So that Swarita is actually targeting socially disadvantaged backgrounds, so that they can introduce music into the lives of the less privileged, and through immersive and experiential experience at their museum. Okay, so they encourage field trips. They actually bring these children to the museum and, you know, expose them to the, you know, kind of facilities that they have. And they also have this project. Swarita also has a reach to neurodivergent background, children from neurodivergent background, where they provide them opportunity to discover the joys of music and, you know, help them to develop their cognitive skills. So this is a very impactful initiative, I think, which they are making good progress with. And the other side is, of course, the Yuva in Culture. So they want the young, the youths to develop intercultural understanding, and so that they can create new engagement opportunities and build, you know, better social relations. So these are two very nice target groups that they are having. One are children and underprivileged, as well as, you know, those with special needs, and the other side is the youth group, who are the future, you know, for us. So, you know, it's a very nice initiative. So I think this is one very good step, and a lot of schools are actually taking up the initiative of having field trips to this museum. So this is a very nice, I think, way to start off, you know. Like you said, every school cannot have its own facility, but so because this is accessible and approachable, so at least, you know, schools can plan such things and begin the exposure this way. And and probably this is a stepping stone towards, you know, getting it into a more serious format. Yeah.
Thanks, Lakshmi, for sharing that. Yeah. And this is actually a lovely museum. I have been there a couple of times.
Right.
And it's very beautifully, not just the immersive, they have these small, you know, very hands-on,
what yes, can exactly. do experimentally. Yeah.
As well as they have the history of Indian music,
sure.
and they have a full section dedicated to that, along with different kinds of instruments. And
yes.
India, as you know, is so rich.
So rich in instruments, yes, yes.
Yeah.
So this is a fantastic way, yes, to actually have an interactive experience is a really great way, you know. We have this for science, but, you know, having it for music is it's a real boon, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think if more such could be, and this is again a philanthropic kind of initiative, but if more such, cultural centers could be created, and it's nice, we are seeing many kind of sprouting here and there, at least in Bangalore, I'm familiar with that. And I'm sure in the Mumbai too, Lakshmi, where you reside, you would be aware of a few. But, if we have such, community sort of cultural centers, which gives an opportunity for those living in that area to, regularly attend and be part of it. And that, I think, itself serves the purpose. If a school can't, it's not possible in a school kind of an environment, you can at least opt for going in.
Very much, very much. So the access, it all boils down to the access, and exposure. Right. Yeah. Yes, very true. That should be made easier.
So with that, I think we'll just take a short break.
Sure.
And maybe after the break, we'll just come back and take a look at, music education itself and the benefits.
Yeah.
We'll just touch upon a few key benefits that music education has for children and for students, and how it can be incorporated.
Yeah, sure.
So we'll meet on the other side of the break.
Sure. Thank you.
Stay tuned to All Things Policy. We'll be right back after a short commercial break.
Hi, and welcome back after the break. My name is Malti, and I was, I have a special guest with me, Lakshmi Iyer, who's when we both were kind of talking about why music education matters. So before the break, we went into, how Lakshmi herself, being a musician, has kind of been exposed to music from a young age and the importance of music in our community. And we'll now kind of look into how music could be, or why music is important for in a school curriculum kind of a setting, and it's and the different benefits that it has. But before going into that, I just want to quickly touch upon the fact that music itself is a universal language, right? It transcends cultures and generations. It brings people together in moments of shared joy, especially in festivities and other things. In India, in particular, the Indian music is so rich and diverse in tradition, and it's profound expression of the country's culture and artistic heritage also. It's so popular worldwide. All of us know that Bollywood music, especially, is very popular in countries which has an Indian diaspora, like the UK, the US, the Middle East. But it's also reached countries as like Pakistan, Egypt, China, Tanzania, Greece. Indian music has kind of spread its tentacles kind of far and wide across the world. And fun fact, I remember even when I was younger, I used to hear is about Rajkumar, who was part of the first family of the Indian of Indian cinema. He's so popular in Russia even back in the 1970s, and he used to his songs like Mere Naam Joker and others was really popular back in Russia, and they used to look forward to his movies, and it continues now with his other generations in within his family also, the Randhir Kapoors and Rishi Kapoors, and now Kareena Kapoor and Ranbir. So the very fact that Bollywood has made it to countries like that, which does not have a common language either, but music again is the common denominator here in this case. It has the soft power also is something that we need to keep in mind.
Very, very nicely said there. Yeah.
Yeah. And Lakshmi, being from Mumbai, right? Do you know what it is like? I'm sure you'll have many other stories about Bollywood music and its.
I was actually exposed to more of Bollywood music after I started whistling seriously, actually. So my childhood was all Carnatic centric. And we would just watch movies and say, nice song, and then that's it. The focus was always on the classical thing that we learned. So exposure was very minimal. But once I started, being more serious with my whistling, then I started getting exposed to Marathi music, also Bollywood, film and non-film. But I started getting that exposure, and I was really surprised. One thing is because I don't know so many languages, different languages. But because of that musical foundation which I had, I found it very easy that I could absorb any genre quite easily, although I was exposed to it very late in life, you know. So that is something I think I really owe it to my musical foundation. Although the early days, it was just very Carnatic centric, but that foundation is very scientific, you know. And so you also mentioned that, yeah, and I agree totally. And Indian music is very scientific. Of course, Western music is equally, but because we are exposed more to our own culture, so yeah, so I think it's a very beneficial thing, and which has, you know, now I can relate to it, you know, how it has helped me to see a lot of and appreciate a lot of other music.
Right. Yeah. And it's amazing, Lakshmi, since you mentioned that, and when we had the recent event, the musical event also, I can vouch for the fact that Lakshmi was the discipline that she brought in to ensure that all of us, when we did the performances, the nuances, ensuring that we got it right to that exact pitch, was really admirable. I mean, with the many small things that one would have kind of overlooked, but because you had that exposure, right, and you it was kind of so deeply ingrained in you could spot where those small, very small, minutest of minute changes in pitch.
And, when really helped. When we want to take something to a serious level, then a lot of a kind of discipline, particularness is very important. We can't brush it aside. So casual things, to a certain extent, you can ignore a lot of things and let it be just a fun element. But it all depends. When you want to when you present something more seriously, then you got to have those correct implements in place. Yeah. So, you know, there is a balance of both. It's not like we are discouraging people who have lesser aptitude, but it depends on the occasion or on the event or on the, you know, scenario itself. But yes, so a little of everything should be there. Yeah, yeah. Seriousness and discipline is very essential for anything, for that matter, not just music. You yourself know for sports how rigorous or serious or devoted you had to be to reach your, you know, you said you had been in state level sports. Yeah, so I'm sure you can draw the same parallels to all fields.
Yeah, I can so relate to that, Lakshmi, because the reason why we're even talking about music is that it complements what we're doing. Many times we don't think of it as the mainstream, right? But music, sports, arts, culture, all these things, right? They kind of complement, and there's a lot of life skills that we develop. There's a lot of, it brings in that discipline, the focus, and it makes a big difference because it makes us more complete and it's a more holistic experience that one has rather than just being exposed to one genre, right? So we'll just talk about five key areas that was beneficial in terms of has also been proven from a cognitive perspective for benefits of music education, right, in our curriculums. So recent studies have also highlighted the significance of music in enhancing these cognitive skills. There's a growing emphasis on integrating music education into primary schools, and NEP also reflects that. The first area I would want to kind of highlight on is enhancing the memorization skills, right, when kids are at that young age. So teachers kind of can use music and songs and melodies to help students learn and memorize and remember things. So even from our nursery rhymes to, other songs that we might pick up, jingles that we might pick up as well, these kind of help enhance those memorization skills at an early age. And, this kind of also helps, especially where children have learning challenges that can affect the child both emotionally and physically and cognitively, of course. So the good news is that music can help in most of these areas.
I have one little example of what you are saying, actually, which it's a very cute thing. So my daughter, when she was, I think, in standard 4 or 5, so they have social studies where history and all is incorporated as well. It's not history per se, but so they have small components of history. So there was this class, and that time she was not learning any music per se, but of course I have given constant exposure to my children where I always sing songs when they were little, you know, while they are putting them to sleep. So they have music exposure, but not learning per se. So there was, and my daughter was very she wouldn't sit down to study, basically. She was a very active child. You couldn't get her to sit for more than like 15 minutes, you know. So there was this portion about Delhi that she was having a test, and it was an entire three-page thing on points on Delhi, you know, Delhi. So then I was trying to get her to prepare for the exam, and just she would not sit down, you know. And every time she would do one page and she would run away, you know, that kind of. So finally what I did, you know, I made a poem out of the whole thing. I tried to make rhymes, you know, all the facts that were in that three pages, I put it into a short poem, and each had rhyming ending somehow. And I put it into a very familiar tune. And I got her to learn it that way. So she was immediately very fascinated. And so she started repeating it. And she, within a day or two, she got the whole thing, you know. So when she went for the exam, I gave her that piece of paper where I printed it out and I gave it to her. And she did the test very well. And later the teacher came, I don't know how, but the teacher came to see that thing which I had printed. And she told me. She used to be very interactive with teachers also. So she would say, see, my mother did this, you know. And the teacher was so fascinated, she kept it as a model for the classroom. And she said, going to preserve this for a future lesson, you know, that way, she said. So because she was so fascinated that all the points had gone into a cute little poem, you know, and a song and a tune, and which helped her really remember all the facts so easily, you know. So I think, you know, that's one thing which I felt really impacted her learning ability or memory, like memory skill that you had, you know, just said. So it really works, you know, it really works.
No, it's fascinating. Thanks for sharing that, Lakshmi. And it's so true, right? We can all put things like this together. Yes. If we need to get it across to a child, right? A child or anyone who might have, even a grown-up or who has maybe difficulty focusing, but if you incorporate something that they enjoy, and make it a fun thing, right?
Yeah,
a child, you can bring out the best out of the child.
Yes.
Just by doing so.
So that we also have to do a little as a parent and as an educator. You also have to do a little bit of homework where you need to see what resources you can tap on to impart these things. You know, so you got to be a little resourceful also. And nowadays we have lot of facility online, you know, to tap into. If you just read a bit beyond your scope, or, you know, you can get important elements. You don't have to be a music, you know, professional per se to be able to do this. You just need a little extra initiative, you know, just to get, so that's the thing I think a lot of us can, you know, do for our children, you know, to create that path. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Lakshmi. Thanks for sharing that. It reminds me of how even mnemonics, right? When we wanted to learn, for example, the colors of the rainbow.
Yes, yes.
And then we say Richard of York gave battle in vain, and then all the colors.
Yes, exactly. Same thing with the periodic table, I remember. We had a law.
Yes, and also planets, right?
Yes. We have the same. So it really helps.
So I think these are these are small tools that make a big difference.
Yes, you know, very much, very much.
Child even connect.
Yes.
And the interesting thing on this thing also is that it has been scientifically proven that learning to play with an instrument helps children with ADHD or learning disabilities. Because it increases their attention and also unlocks the ability to learn, which won't work with the traditional teaching methodologies.
True.
So music strengthens the weak areas of the brain of a child with learning disabilities.
Yeah.
And once the music builds up and strengthens the auditory, the visual, the spatial and the motor.
Yeah, it's a lot of coordination.
And then you suddenly see the child is taken to the next level.
Yes.
Which would not have been possible had they been in a traditional setup, which with a lot of other kids a very regular kind of teaching regiment.
Yes.
So this is on the memorization, and that's what the first point I wanted to kind of highlight. Second is that it, and this is, I think, very relevant in today's day and age, is that music in schools helps keep students engaged. Right. So we know that now there's an overpower stimuli in the form of electronic gadgets. And if that's kind of, it's all around us. The kids are kind of born into that, into the digital, in the digital age, right? So introducing music will be a healthy, you know, option, a healthy hobby that they inculcate. And school for some kids can be very boring because they, for them, their attention spans are short. And to make it more enjoyable, you bring in music, you bring in all these other, you know, it could be other arts, dance, music, culture, cultural activities, sports, and other stuff. And it's like a breath of fresh air.
Yes, yes.
Student
indeed,
also.
Indeed.
It's not just academics, but they're exposed to all of this.
Yeah. So I do have one. Incident like that also to share, where my sister-in-law in Bangalore, she's a life skills coach, life skills teacher actually, and so she was running this TED group, you know, with children. She had about 40 children that she was working with at home. So so among all skills, where communication skills, writing skills, speaking skills, so she also had this, they have to put up this annual event, you know, to get into that. They have a regulatory body who sees their, checks their progress and all. So she had a initiative where she had actually introduced a musical event for them, and some were singing, some were she tapped into all their each one's ability. And even if they didn't have a musical instrument skill, she put them into a choir for singing. So there was a group of keyboard players, guitar players, ukulele, a recorder, and then her son also could whistle. So she combined all of this into one small little song that she took, a Disney, Walt Disney song, which is familiar to everybody. And she got everybody to be part of that thing. And she had taken my help to coordinate that event as well. So it was really nice because you could see the children so excited, even though they were faltering a bit here and there, but it didn't matter because they came together. That was very important. They came together, they understood where they had to come in, where they had to be silent, you know. So it was lovely because this is an age group of, you're talking about 8 to 17 kind of age group. So everybody coordinated with each other and presented a 8-minute kind of musical piece, you know, so which was beautiful. And so this is the initiative she had taken on a personal basis to you know, get kids to holistically develop in various areas. So it was a
TED initiative.
Yeah, it was a
It
was a TED initiative, right, which she took up. It was like, I mean, now she doesn't do it, but she was doing it for a couple of years. Yeah.
Okay. No, that's amazing. I mean, I think it just shows how music can kind of, you know, bring not just age groups together, but people from different backgrounds together, right?
Yes.
Because they have something common that they
experience. Very true. Yeah.
And in fact, that's what I wanted to bring up in my third point also, that it improves the social skills and confidence of children.
Because, very much.
Music can open doors to many opportunities for students.
Yes.
They get a chance, like you mentioned, right? Like performing in choirs, doing a solo performance on a stage,
yes,
or a group performance, in being in orchestra,
if the
instruments, and being part of different competitions. So schoolgoers will then learn how to work and learn and grow as a team, and they get a chance to meet and perform with new people,
yes,
which is also very important to improve their social skills, right?
Very true.
Because that also helps boost the students' self-confidence when they see that they're being recognized, or they're able to take to the stage and able to perform in front of their families and friends and get that appreciation.
Yes.
So I think it's very important that they're constantly encouraged. And I think music is a lovely platform to that, because academics always has its ups and downs, and certain subjects students might enjoy, some they won't.
Yes.
But, you know, all these other extracurricular kind of activities, music being one of them, will help their confidence also.
Yes, very true.
Build their self-esteem.
Because some will be a little more artistically inclined rather than academically inclined. So, you know, it gives a breathing space, actually. Yeah,
right.
So,
right. And they'll enjoy school.
Yeah, and like you said, a lot of these special needs children, or you know, they may be lacking something, but they sometimes have very, very strong music skills. You know, I have seen that
a lot.
They have very strong music skills. So
very talented.
Yes, extremely. So the coordination, you know, the cognitive, the motor sense, the visual, the auditory, they come together very well for music for these children, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's amazing right. to see this.
Yeah, so this is one point. And the fourth point I just wanted to mention, and I think Lakshmi touched upon this when you were sharing your childhood experiences as well, was that that music education helps stimulate the imagination of students, right? They can create images, scenarios in their mind while listening to music. And imagination is extremely important, especially for students and for adults also, right? To think of new and innovative ideas and eventually to excel in their future professions and personal life. So having that, that the visualization skills that come with, and the perception exactly, that music can stimulate, you know, our brains and think creatively, is something that's, that I think it's much required. And we should remember that music plays a big role as a result.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the fifth one, the fifth and the last one I just wanted to mention is that, and this is something that we all know, is that it helps us in relaxing and obviously in also healing.
Yes.
Think of it as a therapy format.
Yeah, that's true.
Relaxing is a given. We all, I mean, I'm sure after a long day at work or even as students or as children, right? Just music being there, being played in a community, in a gathering, it just brings out, people just overcome the inhibitions and then they're able to let go, right? And they
kind of
be part of
it. It triggers various emotions, you know, so it relaxes the mind, especially when you are in a tense moment. If you listen to the music that you like, you know, just listening, it doesn't require anything beyond listening. So it very calms you actually very well. Yeah, I've had personal experiences of listening to, you know, music which is nothing related to my own learning, but still, you know, you get those, that frequency makes some kind of impact in you and brings a sense of calmness. So this helps a lot of these individuals who are like having dementia, Alzheimer's, you know. It does help a lot. And I actually came across one recent, video I saw online where there was this Alzheimer's person on a flight with his wife. And for a moment, she went to the washroom and he was like, you know, very insecure that she's not there. And he started becoming aggressive and violent with the co-passengers. And she... Even after coming, she couldn't control him. And she used to sing apparently some particular song to him. And the minute she started singing it, he immediately calmed down and settled down and things were back to normal. Oh, so that's a very, very clear use of music for, you know, therapy. That this thing, this little story, you know, I mean, really... really makes you, I mean, because when you read about it, does it really work? You know, you might think, but these are real scenarios which people have related. So, you know, there is a potential in it, you know, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a very powerful medium. Sideline it. It's a very powerful medium, definitely.
Mm-hmm. In fact, my mom also kind of suffers from Alzheimer's and she's more than 8 years now. And I can see that visually too, right? When she loves music.
Yeah.
I've realized that it's not the medicines she's taking that is kind of, because she's in like stage 3 of Alzheimer's now. And it is, and Alzheimer's being a progressive, ailment, you cannot go back to the times when you could, you know, it's back to stage 1, medication.
Exactly.
Medication can just kind of ensure that it doesn't progress. But music, I've realized since she listens to a lot of music through the day, and she does a bit of writing also, that has helped her tremendously.
Right.
It keeps her calm. She sort of sings along. Many times she might forget which day of the week it is, but then when the song comes on the radio, she's off. She's singing along and it's wonderful to see her, you know, so relaxed and so peaceful, in the midst of music.
Yeah,
so,
that's what I think. Unless you experience it, sometimes you wonder whether it works, like I said, no? So you have a first-hand experience. I have seen this way. Yeah, which is very nice. Actually.
In fact, we have in Bangalore, there's the NIMHANS Music Cognitive Lab. So okay. NIMHANS, as you know, it's the National Institute of Mental Health and Neurosciences. Okay. And here, the research areas that they focus on in this lab is on music cognition and neuromusicology.
Okay.
Okay, it's a relatively new thing, science.
Right.
It's from basic science, but then they look at from basic science to clinical application, and they found that many people who are maybe post-trauma care, again, people with neurological and other psychiatric conditions like Alzheimer's, they found that how music and how the responses in the brain when it's being played, with different types of music are played, and they've been researching on this for a while now.
Right.
And it's interesting to see that we know that scientifically music does and can make a difference.
Yes, right? Yes.
Even for post-op care, post-trauma, accident care, and all that stuff. Especially where the neurological aspect of the brain is damaged.
Yes, correct.
Way of, and across all age groups.
Very true.
They're doing some amazing work, and really we need more such in our society also.
And from our own association also, I can see that, you know, it's helping a lot of senior citizens as well, because you mm-hmm. know how we have a lot of senior whistlers in our association, as you know too.
Right, yes.
And it gives them a sense of confidence, a sense of expression, mm-hmm. because after some point, you know, sometimes you feel that maybe, you know, once you retire and maybe your importance level is lower,
recognition is not there.
Yeah, so we can see that many of our seniors are so happy when they are whistling, and that somebody is acknowledging their skill and giving them some space to, you know, express, you know. So I think this is a nice thing also, that people can retire into as if they have some musical impact or some kind of input stimulus, sorry. Yeah, some kind of musical stimulus is there. People have a lot of, they get a good benefit from it at their later age as well. Yeah, if they keep it alive. Yeah.
So yes, it's across age groups, really. Though we were touching upon music education for childhood predominantly, but then we know that it's across age groups.
Right? Yes. Correct. So, you know, it shows maybe, you know, childhood you might have that exposure. Maybe you got detached from it. There are many people who detach from it for a couple of years. But if it was given in the childhood, much of it remains within. And at some point, you know, it can be revived.
Right.
Yeah. So that childhood exposure is very, very crucial, actually.
Hmm. Yeah, thanks, Lakshmi.
Yeah.
Yes. And with that, I will like to just wrap up this podcast. Just to sum up what we went over, apart from touching upon the National Education Policy, 2020's points on music, that music education has been proven to have a profound impact on the development of children. Right? It helps children build self-esteem, confidence, and a love for music. And the benefits of music education go beyond just the child's classroom experiences. So letting our children play an instrument, sing in the choir, form a band, or help, you know, all these things can help instill in them a love for music and teach them a lot of valuable skills, life lessons, and of course, people skills. Okay. And so with that, I'd just like to wrap this podcast up. Lakshmi, any final words from you?
Just that I think let people be more open to this concept. And maybe slowly, you know, parents are the initial, the instruments to, get their children into this mode. So, you know, awareness is very important. And then you can see, once you have the awareness, you will have the initiative to be resourceful and look out for things. So the awareness should be created. And then I think slowly, you know, other channels will open up. Yeah. So parents should have that awareness and stimulate that interest in children.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Lakshmi. It was a pleasure having you on this podcast.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for sharing all your experiences.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was very nice having this interaction with you as well. Yeah, thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you, Lakshmi.
Yeah.
And with that, we'll close this episode of All Things Policy. Just a quick note that our postgraduate program in public policy is now open. So the applications for that, you can kind of fill out the application form going to our website, school.takshashila.org.in. So the PGP program is a comprehensive 48-week program that's tailored for those aiming to kind of deep dive into the theoretical and practical aspects of public policy. The early bird deadline, of course, is 8th April 2024, and the course starts on 8th June 2024. Thank you very much, and once again, thanks, Lakshmi.
Thank you, Malati.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week, Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.